This episode has been brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.
Hi, and welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark, and I'm back with Dave, and I appreciate you guys joining us today. We're here to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is the time of year everybody starts, you know, going out of their way to be assholes, and they're kind of like that security guard. They think that they have the best ideas, and all they do is they fuck shit up. But we keep hearing people throw in different names on the Thunder for the trade, trade wire, trade debate, whatever you want to call it. Right now, the two most popular names are Kenny Williams and Ty Jerome. What do you think, Dave? You think we're going to trade one of those guys this year?
Well, I keep on going back and forth. Yes, maybe, no. Here's the reality. If we're going to be trading Ty, it's because we're going to be getting a draft pick in return, and we're going to try to turn that draft pick into essentially another Ty. Ty is what is considered a valuable role player for now and in the future, because they believe that NBA experts believe that he is going to continue to get better. That's why Oklahoma City continues to play him. So obviously, I would rather keep Ty, see how it goes for the next couple of years. You can get him on probably a team-friendly contract, and then just see how it goes from there. I think he could mature and turn into a phenomenal player, especially if he's cool with coming off the bench. Man, he could be amazing. As far as Kenny Hustle goes, we have him on contract for another year for $2 million. So that's what I struggle at. Like, are we going to really trade Kenny when he has made it clear that he wants to stay in Oklahoma City because of, you know, getting a first round draft pick? Kenny Hustle means way more to us than a first round draft pick at this moment for two reasons. One, you can get that first round draft pick probably next year. When the season's over, you still can get that first round draft pick. Number two is the way that he brings leadership to this team. We need that in the locker room. We need that on the floor. You take that away, and it's gonna hurt the growth of this team. So, do I see Sam Presti trading Kenny Hustle? Man, if somebody made that deal really fucking sexy, then it would be hard for him to say no. But again, I don't know where that's going to go. What do you think, man?
Well, okay, so what do you think about the rumor right now that people are saying that Sam Presti, his price right now for Kenny Williams is a first-round pick? Do you think there's more to it than that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when has Sam Presti been cool with just a first-round pick?
I can't think of anything.
I can't think of another time either.
Even Steven Adams... It was crazy how much value he got from that.
Exactly. Like, and that's what it comes down to, is that if Sam Presti is going to be trading Kendrick Williams this year with a $2 million contract next year, which is so team friendly for a championship caliber team, he's going to have to be getting in like a young asset and a really good young asset and a first round draft pick. That makes it sexy. That makes it like, hey, you know what? To me, I wouldn't be upset with that trade. You know, like, that trade right there is getting value. If you're getting a teen player that was drafted last year or the year before, plus a first round draft pick, man, that to me is something that it's hard to pass up. Now, if we're not getting that, and Kendrick Williams has come to Sam Presti and said, hey, I want to go to the championship caliber team, Sam Presti is going to put him there. So we don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but I feel like Kenny really embraces this Oklahoma City Thunder organization, so seeing him without it would be strange.
Yeah, and you're right, we need someone like him. We need multiple people who have like the team in the team's best interests at heart, especially when you have young players. They're trying to navigate it, and we've always had a couple of veterans around the team. I think he's going to be a part of that, and I think the idea of trading Ty Jerome right now, while it seems like, oh well, he's expendable, like, if they were going to trade him, I think they would have traded him in the offseason when he was shooting 40% last year. I mean, at this point, to trade him, I think he's shooting like 27% from behind the arc right now. You're not going to get very good value for him comparatively. So the question is, do they think that he's a 40% shooter, or, you know, is this where they think he's at? The Thunder have never really been the type of organization to sell low. So I'm not thinking that Ty Jerome will get a lot of value right now because he's in a slump, and it's difficult to trade somebody who's in a slump. But I also think that he could end the season in a really good run, and we could find ourselves in a spot where we're trading him before the start of next season. I want him on the team, but I don't know necessarily, because of his age, how long he's going to be on this team. But at this point, I still have a lot of like positive thoughts about how he shot last year. So when he shoots, I still feel like the shot's going to go in.
Yeah, and I put Baisley and Ty in the same category. I wouldn't trade either one of them at this moment. You don't know what they're going to turn into, and you don't know how good they're going to be in the next couple of years. We've seen this team, this Oklahoma City Thunder team, trade players before that we've looked back and been like, ooh, that was a tough trade. I can't believe we got rid of that player. And we've seen other players be like, you know, just take it off. So to me, looking at this team, looking at this Oklahoma City Thunder organization, you have to really try to understand what their goal is. What do you see this team trying to figure out for the next second half of the season? Are they really focused on player development of the young players and only the young players? Then yeah, you're going to see a few of these old players go away. But I also see some of these older players going away and trades to teams that, like, let's just say the Lakers and Blazers, Philly, Memphis, they get together and they have a three-team, three of those teams want to make a deal. They're going to need somebody to be able to take in salary cap. Now, let's just say the Lakers get in a three-team deal with Philly and the Blazers, and they have Westbrook, and nobody wants Westbrook, and they have this massive deal. Like, they could send Westbrook to us for pretty much nothing. I mean, probably like $10 million in return is probably what we'd have to pay, and we could absorb the rest and be cool. Like, there's no other team like that. So again, there's certain situations that we could all of a sudden pop into in a three-team deal where it's like, hey, here, the Oklahoma City Thunder are, and they can take in $20, $25 million and facilitate this situation. So those are the things that I think that we're going to be more active in than us going out and trying to find a first-round draft pick for Kendrick Williams. Come on, guys. Like, seriously, I know a contender is going to die to be able to do that. So then I have to ask, then why are we in a rush to do it? Like, this is why when things start going around on Twitter, it's crazy. Like, here's another one that's interesting that I saw today, too, was Utah, Donovan Mitchell saying that some of the people in his inner circle saying that Utah is not big enough for Donovan Mitchell, that he wants to go to New York. All right, guys, think about this. These are the same people that are coming out with Kendrick Williams, Sam Presti saying one first rounder. Yes, there is a possibility this whole Utah rumor could be true, but do you think really Donovan Mitchell is smart enough to start stirring stuff up middle of the fucking season? I don't think so, man. This is why I think that this is what happens in the trade scenarios. And it happens with Oklahoma City, happens with every organization. There's a frenzy. Everybody's trying to figure out what's going on, who's going here, who's going there. But the reality is every year there's probably one or two trades that were correct. And the entire, you know, massive 1,000, 1,500 trade scenarios that people are going through right now. So it just taking a deep breath, letting things, you know, mellow out. I don't know, just chilling out, you know, like seeing how it all falls through because there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see us trading, you know, any of these guys for a straight-up package. But what I do think could happen is, like you said, we'll find a way to be a part of a bigger deal where we can take on salary. I don't know how long we're going to be in a spot where we can take on salary. It could be this year. It could be next year. That could be our last year. But as we can, we know that there are picks that are associated with that. And so we're looking for that. And as we always talk about, anytime that Sam Presti gets a player thrown into a deal, we end up with a player like Ty Jerome or Kenny Hustle that, you know, now they're being talked about as, you know, trade chips. And I get it. And that's always exciting. But the deal that will end up happening or the deals that end up happening aren't the ones we're thinking of. And they're not going to be as straightforward. We're going to find a way to get, you know, a second round pick for being a part of a deal where we take on some dead money. If it's a big contract, you know, we're going to get some first round picks for it. But at this point, we don't know who those players are. We do kind of have an idea of what teams could be looking to do that. It could be Philly. It could be Portland. The Clippers have a little bit of a need to do that. Golden State and Brooklyn are kind of like in the spot where they are so deep into the cap that they don't have any real need to offload anything because they're already fucked. But these other teams are trying to probably dip underneath the cap, and we can help them get there.
Yeah, and as we're trying to figure out everything, I'm sure we'll keep you guys up to date because I you know, this is where I feel like the people that really truly matter about this Oklahoma City Thunder team, they're going to sit back and they're going to let things roll the way they are. obviously, as we get closer to February 10th, more of our episodes will be focused on that, just talking about scenarios that we might have heard or whatever. But right now, I just feel like we're doing a really good job at highlighting these players and what's happening with them. I see all the negativity. I hear all the negativity. I understand that there is a lot of negativity about this whole team and the way they're rebuilding. But I'm proud of the Oklahoma City Thunder podcast community for finally getting it that this team is not fucking tanking. This is not a tanking scenario. I mean, they're finally understanding. Sure. Wait a second. These guys, yes, they came in hot. Yes, they came in like, you know, guns a flying, but bullets flying. But the reality is that we came here because we knew that the Oklahoma City Thunder community did not understand what a true tank was. This is not a tank. And this has been one of our biggest things that we've said. It is a rebuild. And now you won't hear any of the Oklahoma City Thunder podcast talk about a tank. They'll talk about this rebuild and where it's at. They'll talk about foundation blocks, all these things that we've been saying since day one of being on the show. And it's exciting to me because now we're starting to get this whole idea that this Oklahoma City Thunder team is not going anywhere. It's building, and it's going to be fun to watch as they get better.
Yeah, and it has been fun to watch. And just to bring something up off of Twitter, I noticed that Desmond Bane had something really positive to say about Kenny Williams. He said if it wasn't for Kenny, then he wouldn't have ever made it to the league. And I think that's really important, man. I think that's really something special about Kenny is that, you know, you can't really always take the value of an individual and just say like, oh, it's all about basketball. It's about locker room presence. And I believe Desmond Bane, he's one of my favorite players on a different team. And that hurts me to say because, I mean, I really don't like the Grizzlies from a past where it was some really serious battles with them. But, you know, I love Desmond Bane and I love him for, you know, shouting out Kenny. And I hope that we're not giving him up for just a first round pick. But I think, you know, in the end, that would be a good deal for the Thunder if we were able to get that. But it's more than just about basketball. He's really, you know, he's a really special player, and we're really happy to have him in this organization. And I just feel like you better come with something more than a first round pick if you want to get him from us.
This is the problem with falling in love with players. You know, like as huge super fans of the Oklahoma City Thunder, you fall in love with the personalities, and Kenny has a huge personality. He is a phenomenal human being, somebody that we all are excited that he is in the Oklahoma City Thunder uniform. So when you talk about trading some guy like that, of course it's going to strike a little fuse in us. It's going to make us feel a little, you know, hey, that's our Kenny. Don't be creeping in our area. And that's what we feel like, because we look at Kenny Hustle as next year only having $2 million on his salary, and then he's re-signing another contract at that moment. To us, that contract could be anywhere between 10 and $12 million. Is that worth it? Hell yes, it is. To have somebody like Kenny Hustle on our bench, starting whatever, being the utility guy, it is worth it having a gel guy like that is playing for us. So saying we're going to trade Kenny, to me, it doesn't make sense because he's not going to come out of there and demand this high amount of money per season. He's not going to be a $20 million guy. So you're not going to be throwing a ton of money at him to get him to stay. He likes the organization. He likes the city. Then cool. Then let's get him a team-friendly contract and let's get him to stay for a while, because right when this team is building up and getting ready to compete for a championship, he's still going to be under 30 years old. You know, like still he's a young guy. So what are we talking about? You know, like this is about this team right here. I love the fact that Kenny Hustle's on this team. I love the fact that we're talking about this because I love to spread Kenny love everywhere. So I feel like this is where we're at.
Yeah, man, I've heard some people talking about over the last couple of days about just kind of putting, you know, kind of limits on each player on our team. But I heard this idea I've heard before. It's kind of been around since day one with SGA, but that he can't be the best player on a great team. I just wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit. How do you feel about that?
Man, honestly, that's like saying Scottie Pippen couldn't be the best player on a great team. Or that's like saying Charles Barkley couldn't be the best player on a great team. Or, you know, even somebody closer to home saying Gary Payton couldn't be the best player on a great team. Like, that's what we're talking about. Like, to me, like, you're talking about one day looking back and saying, this young guard that Shea has an opportunity to be one of the best 10 guards of this generation. So when you're saying you're looking back and saying, oh, well, he's not good enough to win the championship. I mean, obviously, not every NBA player is lucky enough to be able to win a championship. Does Shea, like, show that he is capable of bringing other guys around, making other guys better? Yes, but even more so, Shea doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time. He has proven that he can slide over to the two position with Giddey. So that's even more valuable. So I understand what NBA quote-unquote experts will say, that Shea makes it so that we can't win a championship. But to me, I disagree. I feel like Shea is one of those guys that makes everybody around him better because of his style of basketball. He drives downhill. He looks to dish the last second. He looks to score if he can. I mean, like, this is what you need in the modern NBA. Yes, it's nice to have a spot-up shooter, but having somebody that can drive and create shots for everybody else is important. So I understand and I respect those people that get paid millions of dollars to come up with their own ideas of what the Oklahoma City Thunder players can and can't do. But to me, Shea has always proven that he is a winner. And you can't just deny that winners can't win. I mean, like, that's the thing about it. He has proven he is a winner. So you can't deny he can't win.
I mean, he's 23 years old. And we've only had him for what? This is our third year with him. And we go from someone that, you know, nobody really knew anything about to he can't lead us to a championship. Like, in 3 years, at 23 years old, we've already seen that. Like, I don't think so. I mean, like, NBA's player prime doesn't really start until, what, 27, 28? I mean, it can start a little bit earlier, maybe 26, but, like, he was always a late bloomer. We knew that about him, you know? He's lanky, he's filling out, and his game is really on a really high level. If this was his peak, I would say, yeah, okay, SGA is not good enough to lead us to a championship. But to project where he'll be in 4 years, look at his year-over-year growth. You can't just say, oh, this is where he's at and that's where he'll be. Like, it gets harder and harder to get, like, a notch up and a notch up and a notch up. So I think it's undeniable for most people that he's going to be a multi-time all-star. This guy is going to be a star. But can he be a superstar? That's up in the air. But, like, questioning him, whether or not he can do that, that's not really hard. That's not really special. Like, there's always going to be doubters and people who are going to bitch and moan, because that's what we need. We need critics to bitch and moan. If it wasn't for that, then everything would be happy all the time. So it's good to have people question whether or not he's good enough. People question whether or not Jordan was good enough to lead a team to a championship. People question whether or not Coach K could, or Dean Smith could, or any of the great coaches, any of the great players. You look at it, unless they won a championship in the first or second year, people started questioning whether or not they had the it factor to get them there. So it's not, like, unique that people are questioning that. That's actually pretty common. The thing is, you have to look at his track record, and you're looking for year-over-year growth, and then you're looking for the track record of the organization. And to me, I see someone who really has the chance to be one of the top three guards in this league. You already look at what he does at attacking the basket, and yeah, his shot is struggling right now, but this just goes back to that year-over-year growth.
Yeah, I mean, I love this whole thing that we're talking about this, but think about this in more recent history is when Michael Jordan in the 90s was dominating and everybody starts whispering, one of the greatest, right? In the late 90s, one of the greatest, maybe the greatest, right? And then all of a sudden it became the greatest. I mean, he was the greatest, right? And then a few years later, here comes LeBron and everybody is whispering, here's the next greatest, right? Here's the next greatest, here's the next greatest, right? It took, what, 15 years, 14 years for people to start saying, okay, LeBron is a top two player in the NBA. And the fact is that you can put LeBron and Michael Jordan as 1-2 in the NBA. It's insane. And I get that, you know, everybody will say, well, you know, LeBron's not that good, or, you know, whatever you want to say. I mean, I've even seen people say that Scottie Pippen was better than Michael Jordan. So it's all about what everybody says. And I understand that there's the opinion on that matter. But to me, looking at this, is that you have to be able to be a winner and win championships to have your name engraved as a top 20 basketball player of all time. And that's not easy to do. To me, if Shea starts winning, right, and he starts getting a couple championships under his belt, right, and then he starts putting up some great stats, and then he starts doing these other things, there's going to be whispers. But in order for that to happen, like you said, it has to be the organization that surrounds him with good players that are in the right prime of their career to be able to peak at the same time and get all this stuff going in one direction. That's what needs to happen in order for Shea to be able to be in this category as one of the 20 greatest players of all time. And I understand that people are going to say, man, you are so fucking out of your lane, Dave. I get it. But here's the thing about Shea. If he wins three or even four championships, it don't have to be here at Oklahoma, all over the Oklahoma City, and he ends up being a top 10 scorer all time in the NBA or top 15 scorer in the NBA, then you can probably start putting together yourself, hey, you know what? Shea's pretty damn good. He's going to be a great player. But it's so hard to say that he's going to be an all-NBA or an all-star for 7 years or 8 years running. Because he's so young in his career. He just signed his multi-million dollar contract, which goes in effect after this year. So there's certain things that I just keep on going back and around. Like, I understand, I get it, everybody, that you want to take a look at the Oklahoma City Thunder and try to project where they're going. But you can't do that yet because everything is still falling into place. How good is Shea going to be? Can he be a 25 to 30-point player a night, every single night, game in, game out? You know, can he throw away these games where he's only scoring 10, 11 points, 12 points a game? Can he start figuring things out? And my answer to you is 100% yes, because the organization is behind him. They have the player development people in with their staff helping him out. And then they are drafting and making sure that we have a ton of draft picks so that when we are peaking at the right moment, we trade some of those draft picks away and we get the players to shore up this team, to make this team a championship team.
So we got the Pacers coming up tomorrow. 32-point loss last night to the Hornets by the Pacers. Bro, I was glad to see the Pacers, but now that they lost by 32 points at home, they're going to be pissed off and they're going to be trying to pay us back for a game that we weren't even involved in. So this is going to be a tough game if for no other reason, like the Pacers are just got embarrassed.
That's it, man. You know, the Pacers are in trouble just like we are. And I feel like that's going to be one of those things that we're going to see a few times this year. Obviously, we have a lot of teams that are right on that cusp. If they're going to start trying to push for wins or not, I feel like there's at least three or four teams even in the West that every single time we play them, they're going to be like, you know what? We don't want to win this game. It's better for our organization to lose. So, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen, man. I feel like there's going to be a lot of teams that are tanking because there's a lot of teams that lose their draft picks if they're, outside of the top 14. So this is all about just where everybody's going to land. It's hard for me to understand exactly right now, but man, I'm getting excited because I feel like this Oklahoma City Thunder team could end up having, two lottery picks, and that would be crazy.
Yeah, man, and I know I sent you this article. It was on ESPN. Aaron Baines and his fall at the game, the Olympic Games in Japan, when he was playing for Australia. He's someone that we've always appreciated. He's a hell of a player, and we got to learn a little bit more about him through that Luke Longley documentary, the last chapter of the whatever that Michael Jordan Last Dance. Documentary, The Last Dance. Yeah. So basically, it was a hell of a thing to learn that Luke Longley had such a big part of Aaron Baines' development. But Aaron Baines had like a really, really fucking tragic fall. And I hope he makes it back to the league, but he's trying right now to get back to it. But Dave, you read that article too, right? What'd you think?
You got a feel for the guy. I mean, like in my basketball career, I was tackled where the doctors believe I broke up my back. I mean, you've been there, you've broken your back, broken your neck. It's something that's scary. And you look at somebody like, Bane, who is a monster, at 6'10", and he's just a freak of nature as his abilities. And you're like, man, that's not supposed to happen like that. And I'm with him. My thoughts are with him. I was really happy that you shared that story with you, because in a way we've seen this happen with the Oklahoma City Thunder. You guys all hear every single game Chris Fisher talk. He was paralyzed at one point in his life from a car crash, and he worked his way back. You know, this is, to me, it's something that it's powerful. You know, something happens in your life and it puts you down and it destroys you for a little while. These are the type of stories that really help you understand that it's not the end of the world. Things will get better. It's just a temporary issue. And of course, hearing Baines and you know, knowing your story, Mark, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, man, it definitely is. And it was definitely, you know, crazy to read that story. So check it out on ESPN if you haven't read it. I don't know, man. Aaron Baines is a good guy, and we're huge fans of Australian basketball. Obviously, we've got Giddy, and that makes it easy. But, you know, going back, Australian basketball has a great reputation, and they got the bronze in the Olympics, and they deserve that shit. They had a chance for gold. So it was just crazy that he missed out on all that, and I had no idea about that. But, you know, check that out. But anyway, that's pretty much what we have for today. Dave, you got anything else to add?
Yeah, man. I mean, just I hope everybody has a good rest of the week, you know, just relaxing. I feel like that's the biggest thing you can do right now. We got some snow coming. We got that, what do they call them, a bomb cycle on the East Coast coming here soon. So that's going to be fun. I hate fucking shoveling snow, so I'm going to be cussing out the world while I'm doing that.
Yeah, dude, it's coming, and it's going to be deep. So get ready for a couple of feet from what I hear. But, you know, whatever. Bring it on. So, hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. And, man, we're done with that break as far as the Pacers game is tomorrow. And we're excited about that, to finally have another game to talk about. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then. And as always, this episode was brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.